Bill Resnick here for the Old Mower Hour and KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, talking to Harry Fetter, executive director of the organization Fair Test, that describes itself, I'll quote, working to end the misuse and flaws of standardized testing students and to ensure that evaluation of students, teachers, and schools is fair, open, valid, and educational beneficial. So far, we've missed some of the unfair and actually evil properties of the federal law on No Child Left Behind. It's required of public schools, all the testing, and supported by both major parties and especially corporate America. So, Harry, how did you get to so deeply disagree with and work to oppose high-stakes testing and advocate for beneficial forms of evaluation?
So my experience with when I started teaching, I got to know some folks through my high school experience, Herb Mack and Ann Cook, and they had founded a school called the Urban Academy. And Urban Academy was part of a group of schools in New York called New York Performance Standards Consortium, where students didn't take the state regents exams and instead did sort of what we call performance-based assessments. They did projects in the various academic disciplines. So for history, instead of like having to take a test that covered all of history and had to spit out the facts, kids had to show that they knew how to think like historians. So they would do some background research, find a question that historians disagreed on, read materials, and then come up with their own answer to the question, develop a thesis. In the sciences, they would design an experiment to prove a hypothesis, and they would write a lab report, and they would then defend their results. In literature, they would read two works and compare them and see what literary critics said about or find a theme and things like that and write a paper. So there were these projects, demonstrations of knowledge and skill that were not standardized tests. And I thought this is great because it actually encourages the kind of teaching, the kind of student work and thinking that really gets at what we would call deeper learning. So instead of superficial learning, kids would have to actually go deep. So for me, that was demonstration that standardized tests really are not very good drivers of good education. And it struck me that what we were about to use standardized tests for, which is to rank and sort kids, to grade schools, to grade teachers, was a grotesque misuse of instruments that at their core, when they were developed, were certainly biased and racist. And even, you know, today, when we, at least we recognize that that is an issue and that is a problem, particularly like with things like the SAT, and some of the questions that used to be on the SAT, where you could see that if you change the questions, different populations would do better. That, you know, when whatever it is, like rudder is to yacht is one of the analogy questions. Obviously, that has built into it, at a minimum, class bias. I mean, I grew up in the Bronx. I could not tell you what the yacht's rudder was or what it did because, you know, we didn't have any yachts. Anyway, so that campaign, the fight No Child Left Behind, struck me as being sort of a very important moment where the country really took a turn that I think was very detrimental and that we're still getting out of the hole of No Child Left Behind. And let's be clear, it was a bipartisan effort, No Child Left Behind, because it was sort of the combined forces of first George Bush, I mean, the second George Bush, W, not HW, and Senator Kennedy. And civil rights groups were, and some still are, in favor of this idea of we have to test all kids all the time because we have to know where the inequities are, right? That it is sunshine. But what has become apparent over the last two decades is that using those standards and testing kids repeatedly actually does not cure the inequities that the tests perhaps do shine a light on.
Yeah. Let's itemize the harms that students, the harms and evils and troubles that the tests create. Because after all, one thing is that in a test where everybody is ranked and know their ranking, 10% of the students are seen as a part of the 10% and 1%, and 90% are average or below. And average is not, you know, for some people it's okay, but for a kid who learns test after test that they're sort of average, it seems to me a motivation really not to even try in school or even do any kind of learning, especially when the learning is just sort of rote and non-engaging and knowing the names and dates and all of the trivial things with regard to any kind of historic period. In any event, all of the stuff that we went through, it seems to me in my high school and my whole school experience was one of tracking and, in fact, just demoralizing most of the kids in the school.
Right. I think that there are a couple of things that happen. Obviously, you know, as you say, the whole ranking and sorting system and the impact that it has on individual student motivation. But, you know, even beyond that, the real ultimate harm to all kids, not just the kids like who are stigmatized, just the kids who are bad test takers, is that it really doesn't drive a particularly good education. Now, you know, there is a use of testing as an instrument to see if kids can do certain things, right? But again, it's all about how you use tests, right? So we strenuously feel that high stakes use it, basing graduation decisions on it, basing promotion decisions on it, basing college admissions on standardized tests, that these are misuses of standardized tests. Contrast with something like the, you know, and I have some issues with it, but the NAEP test, which is basically, okay, we're going to randomly test and sample groups of kids here and there to see overall how the system is doing with respect to fourth grade math or eighth grade English. So for example, the NAEP test showed us the results that came back right after COVID were kids learning suffered during COVID because they weren't in school. Did it tell us anything beyond that? Probably not. But it at least confirmed that was the case. But when testing dominates the education year, when you're taking days and days and days, both taking the tests and prepping kids for the test, that is time misspent and that is time that cannot be recovered. As you say, test prep is boring. It's just boring. Right? Kids go through it and they do it because they're motivated to succeed. And it also, you know, what does it predict? I'm at a loss to tell you what most standardized tests actually tell you in terms of their, what I would call predictive validity. So having it be the excessive or the sole focus of student achievement is really very harmful to, as you said, you know, students wanting to come to school, wanting to engage their learning. They also wind up having no choice in what they learn because it's prescribed for them. And if students feel invested and get to sort of have some realm of choice, for example, in the consortium high schools, and this is at the high school level, you can demonstrate that you understand and you're good at science. You can do it in chemistry, you can do it in biology, you can do it with plants. You know, there are criteria that you have to meet under rubrics in order to show that you understand that you have the skills and knowledge in a discipline that qualify you for graduation. It's like, this is somebody who knows enough for us to give them a diploma. We can sort of send them off to college or send them off into the world. And that's a much better way than sitting in a room for a couple of hours and filling in bubbles.
Yeah, it seems to me also it robs kids of the joy of learning and of creating. It's just sort of a grind, putting to memory various sorts of emphasis that teachers and administrators think will be on the test so that the schools get high marks and the schools that don't are enormously, horribly affected, and so are the teachers whose grades aren't good. It seems to me it's a machine for creating disappointment and robbing people of the joy of teaching and learning.
Well, you know, you asked me about the effect on the students, but it also has tremendous impact on teachers. And, you know, I would say that standardized testing and lots of test prep essentially deprofessionalizes teaching, right? It says that you have to do this. Here's your curriculum. Here's a test at the end. Deliver. As opposed to teaching being, I don't want to say an art, but it is a craft, right? Because each kid is different. You're thinking, you're trying to figure out ways how to motivate their learning, how to, as you say, to inflect joy into the classroom, while at the same time getting them to acquire knowledge and skills. And standardized tests just doesn't let you do that, and it robs teaching of its craft component. And then in terms of equity and what it does for school districts and sort of branding school districts' failures because of low test scores that are simply reflections of the socioeconomic status of their students, right? So that's the real, I mean, you know, a real, I would say, insidious component to all this is ranking, school rankings and real estate rankings. So if you go to like, Great Schools or Niche or any of these school ranking for the U.S. News and World Report, of course, which ranks high schools, what are those rankings based on? 90% of those rankings are based on test scores. And what are test scores a reflection of? They're a reflection of socioeconomic status, frequently tied to race. And then it even gets infected in real estate prices, because why do people buy houses or seek to move to certain places? They look at the schools, they see how the schools are ranked. Lo and behold, this school has great test scores. And there have been studies done on this, that those school rankings actually heighten segregation. And those rankings are based on test scores. So this is kind of a vicious cycle. And, you know, we say we want schools to be accountable and disaggregate the data and to show how kids of various classes, of various races are doing. And there is something noble about that, because prior to this system, we knew there were inequities, but you didn't have the raw evidence of it, even if the visual evidence told you the inequities, right? Just walk into the different school buildings, you'll see what they look like. But the truth is, knowing that the scores are different doesn't actually solve the problem. What you really need is for the poorer places, for the rural places or the inner city places, to get the kind of education that, let's say, a fancy private school, Dalton in New York or Andover or Exeter, I mean, they're not larding their kids with standardized tests. They're having them do real work. And why shouldn't that be good enough for communities of color and poorer communities? Just because, you know, we have this entrenched socioeconomic system. And I think standardized tests actually do more to perpetuate that than they do to cure it.
Yeah, Henry Fetter, director of the organization Fair Test, we're coming to an end. Seems to me we should talk about the larger political implications. My sense is, at least here's a hypothesis, that high-stakes tests function as the legitimation for the meritocracy that we allegedly have, but it's a society that's anything but meritocratic. It's sort of a machine for the aristocracy and elites to reproduce themselves. You know, children from well-to-do families start ahead and the school system functions to solidify their position on top. Yeah, why don't you talk about that?
I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think that standardized tests, there is an argument that because they're just sort of all scored the same way, that it will recognize what they call the diamonds in the rough, right? This is the argument for keeping the SAT, that poor kid who's really smart. And if you read some of like the New York Times columnists like John McWhorter or Russ Douthat, you know, that is the argument that they make about this thing, because the test optional movement in college admissions is viewed by some as an abandonment of meritocracy. Now, that's based on two faulty propositions. One, that the SAT and the ACT actually measure merit which I suggest they do not, right? They measure your capacity to prepare. They measure how you're doing on that day at the moment. They don't connect with anything particularly important in terms of what they predict of a person's sort of lifelong performance. So that's one problem. If we wanted to create a meritocracy, right, this was kind of a crappy way of doing it. But because the tests and testing, as you say, are tied into socioeconomic status, it does have a kind of a self-perpetuating faux meritocracy, right? So people who at one point get up there in terms of wealth and in terms of education get to sort of pass that legacy on. And because there are sort of a limited number of slots in, you know, the top echelons of higher education, that is not egalitarian in any way, shape, or form. Also, because the real issue, of course, is, you know, at the primary and secondary school level, when there is so much inequality and inequity among schools and among districts, that you can't say that a test at the end is actually, you know, anything other than a reward for where you were born.
And to whom?
Yes. Well, where and to whom. And of course, race is a factor here as well, given the history of the United States. But where you are born, and even the idea of not just your like innate God-given, you know, some people are better at math than others. It's just true. It's just the way their brain works, right? But a lot of people say, but I worked hard. Well, you know, your hard work was also a product of luck because you were born into a family that encouraged these certain habits, or you developed these habits because of your experience. So you still, the idea of just desserts, as it were, is a false idea. And the standardized tests essentially just sort of kind of do have this impact of rewarding, you know, where and to whom you were born, because systems are good at propelling people towards that certain goal.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick for The Old Mole talking to Harry Fetter, director of the organization Fair Test, that has fought for over 20 years for authentic assessment to replace high-stakes testing. Following Harry's latest remark, I want to amplify it, namely that meritocratic organizations are by definition hierarchical. That's justified by the assumption that they should be led by the best and brightest. And in the U.S., the kids are sorted by tests, identifying the best and smartest with the highest IQ, another high-stakes test, which is how elites reproduce themselves. Sure, some kids from working class and poor backgrounds manage to enter, fight their way into the elite, and some of the elite wind up falling far toward bottom. But mostly elite parents produce the next generation of elites. And in a capitalist society where all profit-making organizations try to dumb down jobs to lower wage costs, near all important decisions are made by those elites in politics or in economics. As to the people, most are conditioned to work hard and buy stuff. Well, that's not a good society for so many reasons. One of those reasons, that the great majority of humans have the capacity for complex thinking and creativity, but that so often is never developed. And this tragedy deepens because we know enough about how to democratize all organizations and the state, and thus create that other possible, necessary, and sustainable society, as discussed on The Mole and other KABU programs. Harry Fetter, thanks so much for talking to us. Hope to talk soon, telling the story of how high-stakes testing can be junked and authentic evaluation and authentic teaching and craft teaching instead of by the numbers can be developed in your school district and every school district. That will be in part two of our interview with Harry Fetter coming soon. So thanks for talking today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.